This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the nation's collective waistline continues to expand, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced a new set of nutrition guidelines yesterday, an interactive, personalized, and updated version of the familiar food guide pyramid. Instead of horizontal lines with big swaths of grains and vegetables at the bottom and a little tip of meat at the top, the new pyramid uses differently colored vertical bars to represent different food groups with a staircase on the side to emphasize the need for exercise. The USDA also set up a new website to explain what all this means and how to follow the new guidelines as we all fight the battle of the bulge. We'll hear from the USDA this hour and from a nutritionist about how all this works, and, of course, we want to hear from you. If you've looked at the new guidelines, do you find them helpful? Do you think you'll pay more attention than you did to the old pyramid? Give us a call, whether you're impressed, concerned, or confused. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Before we get too far into the food pyramid, though, we want to talk about another weight-related story in today's news. A study in this week's Journal of the American Medical Association reports many fewer deaths from obesity than previous government estimates. Just last year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention ranked being overweight as number two among the nation's leading preventable causes of death. According to this new research, that ranking is more like number seven. It's a bit confusing, so we've asked Dr. Arthur Frank to read the new research and sort it out for us. He's medical director of the George Washington University Weight Management Program, and he joins us by phone from his office. Dr. Frank, good to have you on the program.
It's nice to be here, sir.
Is obesity less harmful than we thought?
No, it is every bit as harmful as we thought. What we have here is an extremely complex problem because it's very hard to attribute death to obesity. Obesity is one of those characteristics which doesn't typically get onto a death certificate. We don't necessarily assign deaths to obesity, but what happens with obesity is that it complicates, very substantially complicates, a whole series of other medical problems which are in fact killer diseases. So we've got the extraordinarily complex epidemiologic and statistical problem of trying to sort out how much of this is because of obesity and how much of this is because obesity, say for example, raises your blood pressure or complicates your diabetes or your cardiovascular disease. It's very hard attributing exact and precise causes of death to obesity as opposed to the complications of obesity.
So does this suggest that there's an awful lot about obesity that we still don't know?
Well, no, we know, yes, in epidemiologic terms, yes, that's true. In medical terms, we know quite a bit about it. We know that it is a serious medical problem, but the calculation of exactly how many deaths are related to obesity or the complications of obesity is an extraordinarily complicated problem for very sophisticated epidemiologic and complex statistical calculations. And there's a lot of fine-tuning that goes into this, and I think that even this report acknowledges the uncertainties of the conclusions and the imperfections of the calculations.
But if you looked at some of the stories that were in the newspapers this morning, you would have looked and said, gee, being a little bit overweight, not so bad.
Well, that's part of the problem. Everybody who is substantially overweight was at one time merely a little bit overweight. And it's a progressive disease. And so even being mildly overweight, while it may not have a serious implication or consequence for you right now, the tendency is that it does tend to get worse and it does tend to progress with time. So there's no reason at all to be complacent about a little bit of obesity or a little bit of overweight simply because it tends to predispose people to the complications of obesity. If not now, then later. It's a progressive disease, and it has serious medical consequences regardless of the stage of it that you have at this particular time.
So is this an example of one of those situations where an article by specialists for specialists was taken by generalists and maybe misinterpreted a little bit?
Well, not so much misinterpreted, but I think that it fails to recognize the complexity of the problem. It tends to be an oversimplification, or it tends to be interpreted in oversimplified terms.
Dr. Frank, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate
it. Thank you, sir.
Arthur Frank is medical director of the George Washington University Weight Management Program, and he joined us by phone from his office. And now we turn our attention to the new food pyramid, and joining us to help us decipher the new food guidelines, we turn now to Eric Henkes, director for the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion at the United States Department of Agriculture. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation again.
Well, it's nice to be with you.
Now, the old pyramid, that's now gone. What should we know about these vertical bands of color in the new food pyramid?
Okay, what you need to know is that we have taken a different approach than what we had in 1992, and the approach that we have is a systems approach. We recognized that in 92, we wound up with a situation of one size fits all, and there wasn't the recognition of the differences or the individuality that was there, but it didn't come through. So with the systems approach, our intentions are to have a symbol, a more simple symbol that carries just a few messages that is more the motivational driver. There's a slogan that goes with it, Steps to a Healthier You. And then there's secondly, an education framework, a platform for the education messages to interpret the 2005 dietary guidelines. And then the third item is that once you're motivated, once you're educated, and you want some help, we do have interactive tools that are available, one that's a very introductory one and one that is more advanced.
And these tools, they're on computers. They're on the Internet.
Correct. And as I understand from yesterday, we have huge interest in this. And in fact, it was too big for us.
Yep, a lot of people couldn't get on, yeah.
Yeah, we thought that we had contracted with one of the biggest providers to be able to give us that initial capacity, and we exceeded it tenfold. I think I was reported this morning to me that we had over 48 million hits yesterday,
so,
which exceeded way beyond what we thought.
And the purpose of that is, though, as you said, the old food pyramid, one size fits all. This recognizes that a lot of people are different.
Yes, very much. And so people needed to be able to get more individual data. You needed to be able to recognize yourself. So in the very basic tool that is provided, an individual can go on their, put in their age, their gender, and then have a selection of three different activity levels and be able to choose one of those. And that's all the information that would be required. And that will tell you what – it'll give you a food pattern for your pyramid that has the estimated caloric intake for somebody generally in your age and gender.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell you how many – cups and ounces. We're getting away from servings.
The ill-defined servings, yes.
Yes, that you would need within your own food pattern. So a father might need 4 or 5 cups of vegetables, and the wife, the mother, might need 2.5, and a teenage daughter might need 2.5. So they can all eat the same food. It just tells them the pattern that they need.
And this is all at mypyramid.gov?
Mypyramid.gov.
All right. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@npr.org. And joining us is Jim calling from St. George, Utah.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
I just tried while you were speaking about the website to try again because I tried yesterday and could not get the result.
Any luck?
So it's still being overtasked, which is a good thing. People are paying attention to it. I like the new artwork on this. My concern, though, is that unless it's completely integrated into our social system, similar to the old symbol which we all grew up with, you know, that shows the amounts that you use on a daily basis, that it probably people won't pay attention to it after the newness has worn off. And then the second part is I'm concerned about the BMI measurement, the body mass index, and how that ties in with this, because myself, a male, 6 foot tall, it says that I should weigh about 155 or 160 pounds or else I'm obese. Yet if you were to see a 6 foot male weighing 155 or 160, you'd think they're anorexic.
Yeah, buy them a hamburger. Dr. Henkes?
Yes. No, Jim brings up a great point here, and this is what we recognize in discussions with our staff, that yesterday was just the first day of what we need to consider a three-year introduction of My Pyramid. And we are looking toward our traditional partners, nutrition extension specialists at land-grant schools and across the country, our partners within the food assistance programs, the food stamps, the women, infants, and children, our partners with the school lunch programs, and groups like the American Dietetics Association to be carrying these messages and helping us get this out. But in addition to those traditional partners, we're looking for other partners. And I'll use one example, retailers. If we have the symbol, the messages, and all coordinated with point of purchase so that we are working with retailers to have this information where people are actually shopping or potentially in their flyers. Jim is absolutely right. We've got to integrate it into where people are actively involved in buying food and consuming food and stuff, and that will be a key. On the second point on the BMI,
and make it quick if you would.
Hmm?
Could you make it quick if you could?
Sure. On the BMI, we recognize his issue that BMI maybe isn't the best measurement for an individual, but maybe better for a population.
Thanks, Jim, for the phone call. We appreciate it. We're talking about the government's new approach to nutrition. We'll have more after a short break. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We'll also be hearing later from somebody who's actually followed this advice to hear about how easy or difficult it was. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the government's new guidelines on what and how much we should eat. Our guest is Dr. Eric Henkes, the director of the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And, of course, you're invited to join us. Have you tried to live by the old food pyramid? Do you understand the new nutrition charts? Or do you have questions about them? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And Dr. Henkes, you were talking earlier about this Internet aspect of this program, which seems to be central to it. There are an awful lot of people in the country who do not have computers.
Yes, and we do recognize that, and that's why these our traditional partnerships are important. And much of these materials will also be available in print as we move forward. So if somebody in a food assistance setting doesn't have Internet, they can get these materials by going through the education programs provided to support those. The same with counselors that will deal with women and infant and children, and for school food service providers. These materials, posters, and the traditional type of materials will be provided.
Good. Joining us now is Catherine Tallmadge, a nutritionist, weight loss consultant, and a national spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association, also the author of Diet Simple. She's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to get your initial reactions to the new food guide pyramid.
Well, time will tell if the pyramid conveys to consumers that those vital nutrition messages of taking a personalized approach, moderation, variety, and balancing calorie consumption with activity. I think it's a great first step.
A great first step. What particularly do you like about it?
Well, I think it's terrific that they're taking a personalized approach. As registered dietitians, that's what we've been doing for mm-hmm. decades, although we take more into consideration, medical background, personal history. It's minimal as far as a personalized approach, but I can't imagine any better way to reach a whole population. Mm-hmm. They're doing a great job for having to reach a whole population.
Let's get some more listeners involved in the conversation, and let's join by now Sadiqa in Tallahassee, Florida.
Hi, it's actually pronounced Sadiqa. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name.
No problem. I too haven't been able to get online to see the food chain, but I just was wondering if you all considered persons of African descent such as myself, we can't take dairy. We have problems with dairy, and with the last pyramid, dairy was pretty much up there. So I was wondering when you reconsidered, you said it's more individualized. When you say that, did you consider how different cultures and different races, how they affect, how food affects them differently?
Dr. Henkes?
Yes, this is, thank you. The dietary guidelines for Americans that were produced by USDA and Health and Human Services in January have 18 key recommendations that do look at specific population and address issues such as the caller brought up. And we will be looking to move all the materials from my pyramid over the next 3 years to address targeted populations. The very first one will be children, and then we will move on from there.
So it will in the future, but it does not now.
Where the dietary guidelines reflect specific population needs, you can see that information in there, in the tips area, in the all the information that would talk about any particular food group. That is all in there currently, but we don't have a whole My Pyramid specific to different populations, but that is our goal, is to be more specific.
Catherine Talmadge?
Right. If you go to My Pyramid website, it will direct you to the Dietary Guidelines as an additional resource. And in the Dietary Guidelines for Americans of 2005, which the American Dietetic Association played a large role in formulating, there are very specific recommendations for various population groups, such as vegetarians who don't drink dairy products. There's a whole list, as a matter of fact, of calcium-containing foods that, say, a vegan who doesn't eat dairy products or an African-American who doesn't eat dairy products can use instead. So it's really a terrific tool.
Sadiqa, you're trying to get in there.
Great. Yeah. Yes, actually, my second question was going to be that I am a vegan, and because I'm a vegan, I have a four-year-old son, and I go to the doctor, and we back and forth with him telling me that I need to give him dairy, and I don't give him dairy. And so I was going to ask, what about people who wanted to be vegan? What should their food pyramid look like, or the next person? So that's very, very, very good that you all are implementing that. Thank you very much for the show. It's great. I love your show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the phone call. Is it possible that this might be used to convey what Americans should not be eating? I mean, there's no picture of a bag of potato chips with a line through it or anything like that. Is there, Dr. Henkes?
No, there is not. But one of the real messages that we will want to get out from the guidelines and from My Pyramid is moderation, and that you should be eating more foods that are more nutrient dense. In other words, we don't have a lot of extra calories in for a lot of Americans, and you need to use those calories wisely. So get as much nutrition as you can from your food choices for the calories that you're expending. And that is the message we'd like to get out about how you choose your foods. This is a matter, I'll give one quick example. Choose skim milk instead of whole milk. You get a lot more nutrition with less calories.
Well, Dr. Thomas,
yes.
Catherine Thomas.
The pyramid does address these issues and talk really well about discretionary calories, extra calories, foods that are fatty mm-hmm. and sugary, and how many calories per day you should not exceed in discretionary calories. And I think that's terrific.
It might have been more direct, though, in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. A lot of people fear is going to be reluctant to tell people not to eat certain kinds of foods.
Well, in the U.S. dietary guidelines, they are very specific and do tell people to minimize saturated fats, animal fats,
and
sugary foods.
Sugar is a big complaint that some people have about this. Yeah. Anyway, let's get some more callers on the line, and this will be Vivian. Vivian's with us from Long Island in New York.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome.
I believe that the word moderation is key here, and I think that my pyramid seems to be addressing that. I was concerned by something that was said by a previous speaker on the show, Dr. Frank, who was referring to something I read about in the Times this morning about someone being slightly obese or slightly overweight and not being concerned and having greater longevity. And he called it the beginning of a disease. And I think someone who's slightly overweight does not necessarily is not necessarily at the beginning of the disease. And I think that there are people whose body types might have them a little overweight, and we should individualize this and not label or use that kind of fear rhetoric that I think might make some people give up.
Let me ask you about that, Catherine Tallmadge. Dr. Frank was talking about, obviously, people who are obese started out by being a little obese.
Of course, this is where your own doctor or registered dietitian comes in. What we do is help people analyze their personal medical background, their height, weight, waist-hip ratio, all of those things to try to analyze what they should weigh individually. You can't use a chart really effectively that's designed for a population to decide what you personally should do.
Vivian, thanks for the phone call.
That's a good answer. Thank you.
Let's go now to Carly, and Carly's calling from San Diego.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a first grade teacher in San Diego, and we're right now studying the food pyramid with my first graders, and I was wondering how to incorporate this new food pyramid to a level that first graders can understand. Individualizing is hard for them to grasp at this point.
Dr. Henkes?
The old pyramid was great. How can I bring the new pyramid in?
Dr. Henkes?
In 2 to 3 months, we will be introducing a child-specific version of my pyramid. And so it will be there probably right at the end of this school year, but we will be introducing it, and hopefully teachers such as Carly will have the summer to explore it and look at it and be able to incorporate it into their program starting next school year.
And by then she ought to be able to get on the website.
Yes, I sure hope so.
Carly, is this an important element of your instruction to first graders every year in your curriculum?
It is, especially where I'm at. It's very important. My kids really don't know the difference between healthy and unhealthy foods. So that's really what we're focusing on in my first grade classroom, and our first grade team is making sure our kids know the difference and can make good choices for themselves, that maybe their families don't have necessarily healthy lifestyles, but they can choose to not have cookies every day or to moderate what they're eating.
Carly, thanks for the phone call, and good luck.
Thank you.
Here's an email question from Michael. So now that we've spent a significant amount of money on the studies to fund these new pyramids, are schools going to do more than just pay lip service to the results? I'm tired of seeing the food pyramid mounted on the wall directly next to soda, brownies, and greasy pizza in school cafeterias. And I guess, Dr. Henkes, that may not be such a question for you as for the local school board.
Yeah, you're exactly right. A lot of people don't understand that the federal program is set, and the federal school lunch program must adhere to the dietary guidelines, and that group is working right now on the 2005 dietary guidelines to get that incorporated. But the local level school can have competing foods in the system, and that is a place for the parents, the PTA, and others to get involved.
Well, joining us now is Roy Rivenberg, a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times, who followed the USDA's nutritional recommendations for 10 days in February, following the instructions of the new food pyramid, and he joins us now from his office at the LA Times. Nice to speak with you.
Hi. Good afternoon.
I understand you ran into trouble even before you finished breakfast on the first day of your new diet.
I did. I was over the sugar limit.
All right. With what?
With just some cereal, jam on the English muffin, and before I could even drink a little chai latte, it was too late.
So how do you keep track of your food intake?
You know, I think if you follow the spirit of this thing, it's better than trying to measure things with cups and tape measures and all that.
So use it as a, Dr. Henkes was talking, motivational tool and outline rather than the specifics that a lot of people were looking for.
If you try and follow it specifically, you'll go crazy.
Now, did you use measuring cups and calculators and all of that?
I did. I would have to go online between meals and I decided that you could spend so much time adding up all the calories and sugar content and all that that you wouldn't have time to eat. So that's how you lose weight.
Well, exercise is a big element of this new thing, the staircase on the side. Did you adhere to those regulations as well?
I did, and I've stuck with it even since then. I think it's a good program.
So how did you keep track of your burned-off calories?
They have a website that tells you how many calories you use for everything from playing an accordion to kneeling in church to caulking a log cabin to changing a light bulb.
You know, it sounds like this is awfully complicated.
It is. I think if you just get half an hour or so of exercise most days of the week and increase your fruits and vegetables and whole grains, it actually works.
Did you notice physical changes yourself?
I've had a lot more energy, and I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I dropped a couple of pounds, and it works. I think that they, for this latest thing, they picked the wrong day to publicize it.
Yeah, well, they had a little competition for news yesterday.
Well, see, maybe they should have had a little puff of smoke come out of the USDA headquarters.
What rule was the hardest one for you to follow?
The sugar.
Sugar.
Thing. I don't eat that much sugar. I don't have a sweet tooth, but it was the limits were very low on it, I thought.
So, as you know, it's been criticized for not emphasizing sugar reduction enough. For you, there was still not enough sugar.
Right.
Are you still eating healthier after this?
Definitely, yeah. I've changed the kind of bread I buy. I switched from, I had what I thought was multi-grain, so I assumed it was healthy, English muffins. Now I use whole grain breads, and I buy a lot more vegetables.
Well, Roy Rivenberg, good eating. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks.
Roy Rivenberg is a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times and joined us from his office at the paper. We're discussing the U.S. Department of Agriculture's new nutrition guidelines, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Frank joins us from Brentwood in California.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I had a question. There was an earlier comment about eating nutrition-dense foods and not junk to kind of get enough nutrition. And I was told actually by a nutrition professor that he would prefer like a chocolate bar and a vitamin as opposed to a power bar just because it tastes better, but they have the same amount of nutrition.
And, I guess that's a question. Dr. Henkes, does the food guidelines address that at all?
Well, that direct comparison, I'm not sure we have it, but there are. If people want to get in and look at the more advanced tools that is available and explore what foods are there and how they do fit, there's over 8,000 foods in the interactive tool of the tracker, and there's over 600 physical activities, as Rory noted. So you can look at these aspects. But I think some of the stuff that Roy talked about is just excellent, the way that he approached it by the lifestyle changes and small steps.
So you wouldn't recommend, say, supplements instead of regular foods?
The whole dietary guidelines and my pyramid is a food-based program. But there is a section on the website that goes to dietary supplements and discusses those.
Frank, thanks.
Great, thank you very much.
Here's an email from Susan Martin. When I was a kid, we had the four food groups. I later learned the meat industry had a lot of power in making sure that meat would have a significant place on the chart. Has the meat industry commented at all on the new chart, or have any industries lobbied to influence the dynamics of the chart? Why don't we put that to you, Catherine Tallmadge?
Well, the USDA, from what I understand, has been very open during this process and has listened to consumer groups as well as industry groups, and that's, I think, their responsibility as a government agency. There has been some influence. The question is, has it been undue influence?
Dr. Henkes, I'm sure this is not the first time you've been asked this.
Yes, and we throughout this process, we've used the notice and comment of the Federal Register. And we first had comment on the scientific basis on everything, the nutrients and how we made up the patterns. And we had over 250 comments. We then came out with a notice about the communications and this whole systems approach. And we got over 400 comments plus opportunity for 40 different groups to come in and talk about in an oral comment public session. So all of those are on the website. So as Catherine said, we got input from everybody in this. And so I believe that we got we have a better product because of that input, but all of the messages are based on the dietary guidelines.
The American Dietetic Association was deeply involved in the formation of the dietary guidelines, and we're pretty happy that they're science-based.
We'll have more on this issue after the break. Of course, we're discussing the new nutrition guidelines. And while we're on the subject of food, the 50 best restaurants in the world. That's all coming up after the short break. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News. Today we're talking about how to be healthy using the government's new food triangles, and our guest is nutritionist and weight loss consultant Catherine Talmadge, who's also a spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association. And let's get some more callers on the line, and we'll go to Fred. Fred's with us from Lansing, Michigan.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm responsible for running food services for the state of Michigan, and across the nation there's about 3,000 blind people who run food service feeding government employees, postal workers, and now highway vending. And I'm wondering how accessible this website is. I've heard a lot of talk about triangles and colors and things, and most blind people who use computers use screen reading technology. I'm wondering if there's an accessible version of this website someplace.
Dr. Henkes from the USDA has regrettably had to leave. Do you know the answer to that question, Catherine Talmadge?
I believe the only thing that's available right now is the website, and I think they're working on it being more accessible. And I worry about access myself. You know, all the great nutrition knowledge in the world isn't anything unless it has real impact on people's everyday lives. And so access to this information is very important.
Fred, I'm sorry we couldn't get a more definitive answer for you.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot for trying.
Thank you for the phone call. Let's go now to Troy, and Troy's in Iowa City.
Yes, I got a quick question for you. I would like to know how many people were actually tested with the food pyramid. Was actually blood work actually done to find out if this pyramid actually works, or did you just take the word of so-called specialists?
Well, a so-called specialist is with us here.
A board of about 20 top nutrition scientists from all over the country convened and looked at research from decades to come up with these guidelines. And yes, blood tests were often used. The clinical studies were reviewed. Epidemiological studies were reviewed. Only very well-done studies were reviewed to come up with the data that formed this scientific basis for these guidelines.
Troy?
So what you're saying is you actually gave people these foods or a food and found out how that food worked on their blood system.
Actually, yes. Clinical studies have been done. That's how clinical studies are conducted. They've been done over the past 10, 20 years. All those kinds of studies were reviewed for these guidelines to be developed. We know, for instance, at the high ranges of fruits and vegetables, people receive the most benefit. People receive benefits from omega-3 fatty acids by decreasing inflammatory biomarkers and reducing cardiovascular risk factors. And those are all done on clinical research studies, and those are the kinds of studies which were reviewed to come up with these guidelines.
If your research is done by people who you like, it is included, but if they're done by, we'll just say, the meat industry, it might not be included because you might not like their study, therefore they might not be in your group. So what you're really meaning is you actually have not done the blood work to find out personally that this has not worked.
I think she just said that those blood work studies were done, Troy, and I guess, you know.
I would like to, okay, can you put on
and
your
I can
website,
say that as a dietitian.
Can you put on your website where I can find this information to make sure that you are telling us correct and not just are pulling this stuff out of the air?
Again, it's not her website. It's the USDA's website, and all I can ask you is that you might go on the website and take a look at it. It's mypyramid.gov. Thanks for the call, Troy. All right, bye-bye. Let's go now to Ted, and Ted joins us from Buffalo, New York.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could possibly comment on the affordability of the food pyramid and actually following the new guidelines. And I was wondering if you might be able to tell me if, in that same spirit, if using canned fruits and vegetables might be a good substitute for fresh fruits and vegetables. I myself am an epidemiology student on a very meager income.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy that you asked that question. Personally, I never ate more healthy than when I was a poor college student. But also, working with clients as I have for the past 20 years and helping them change their eating habits, as many registered dietitians do, I can tell you that their food costs plummet when they start eating a healthier plant-based diet. When you're looking at fruits and vegetables, either fresh, frozen, canned, dehydrated, juiced, are all included, and they're very cheap on a per-serving basis. You know, a pound of peaches will give you 4 servings of peaches, or 4 cups of peaches. So fruits and vegetables are very inexpensive. You just need to go to the store and make sure you look at fresh, frozen, canned for that particular season, buy seasonally, focus more on beans, small amounts of leaner meats. It means you need to prepare the food at home. You can't go to restaurants and expect that your diet's going to be cheap. But preparing the food at home, basic cooking skills, it's all that's necessary. In fact, the USDA has a website. If you go to also for thrifty meal plans, they call it, and they give you ideas for economical, healthy meals. And the American Dietetic Association at our website, eatright.org, also has ideas for healthy, inexpensive meals.
Well, as you know, there's been criticism that the way the American food industry works, processed foods, though less nutritious, are sometimes cheaper than fresh foods.
Well, actually, on a nutrient per nutrient basis, they're more expensive. A pound of chips may be $2.79. For that same price, you get 4 pounds of vitamin C-rich and fiber-rich potatoes. So always, if you go to the roots, to the basic food, it's going to be cheaper than the processed food, nutrient per nutrient. Maybe not calorie per calorie, but if you're just looking at calories, maybe we ought to just live on oil. That's where you get the most calories for the cheapest price.
Ted, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And before we let you go, could you give us, you know, have you tried to look at this pyramid? Have you tried to eat on it? Any practical advice for somebody who's might be willing to get up and be motivated?
I do it myself, and I help my clients switch to healthier eating every day. That's what I've done for a living for 20 years. And I suggest that people take it slowly. Make one change a week at a time. For instance, the first week, try to start having a healthy breakfast. Maybe oats cooked with a cup of milk, some berries, a glass of orange juice, some nuts sprinkled over that. That's a great healthy breakfast. Practice that for a week. Second week, try adding more fruits to your diet. Bring a couple of fruits with you to the office each day. Third, and practice that for a week. Figure out how much fruit that means you need to buy at the grocery store. Third week, try adding more salad at dinner. So go to the grocery store and buy enough salad ingredients. So if you make changes week by week, expect slow changes, I think you'll get terrific results.
Catherine Talmadge, thanks very much for being with us today. Catherine Talmadge is a nutritionist and weight loss consultant, a spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association, the author of Diet Simple, and she joined us here in Studio 3A. Coming up next, once you've lost the weight, how to eat in style.